and welcome. Tonight, we are putting the spotlight on the continuous rise in global military expenditure in the recent years and the 3.7% increase in 2022 alone, reaching an all-time high of $2.24 trillion, according to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. By any standard, this could mean nothing but an increasingly insecure world. In this edition, we will discuss the reasons behind this sharp increase and its ramifications. To do that, we are joined by Harley Shanger, spokesman of the International Schiller Institute, who is joining us from Germany. We're also joined by Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist from Bristol. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen. Let's start with Mr. Shlanger, who's joining us from Germany. Now, the Cold War levels of military expenditure have returned to Central and Western Europe. Their military expenditure has reached $345 billion in 2022. What does this signify?
Well, it signifies the Europeans giving in to enormous pressure from the United States. And this actually started before the Ukraine situation. It was President Trump who started putting pressure on NATO countries to spend more money, saying that the United States is paying too much of a burden for the alliance with Europe. But the Europeans were somewhat reluctant to do that. There was a lot of opposition to it. And then along came the decision to bring NATO into a war against Russia and Ukraine. And at that point, the pressure really started ramping up with the regular meetings going on at Rammstein, the so-called Ukraine contact group. And also, of course, Zelensky was built up as a great hero who was deployed personally to go before parliaments, to go before NATO, to demand an increase in spending. So this is partly what's driven the European budgets. And it's occurring at a point when the economies of many of the European nations are very stretched. So I don't think this kind of increase can continue. Of course, the biggest increase has been in the United States, but we can come to that in a moment.
Exactly. We are going to have to discuss how this affects the domestic economies of both the Western European countries and also the United States. But since you brought up NATO, I would like to address Mr. Gosling. Mr. Gosling, NATO's expansion in its military spending has reached 1.96 billion euros. This represents a 25.8% increase compared to 2022 alone. How far do you think Europeans can go with this kind of expenditure?
Well, I think there'll be a lot of Europeans asking the same question. I mean, I'm scratching my head here, really scratching my head, to try and think of which leaders it was that it was elected that asked the public when they were elected that they wanted to boost military spending by massive amounts. And I don't think I can remember a single one. So you have to ask the question, is this a democratic decision that's being made, or is this another dictatorial decision from the top? So have the people been consulted? The answer is no. The other question I have is, what do they know that we don't? Why is it that these elites in the West particularly, and of course in China there's been big increases in there, in Japan too, are they planning a war? Are they planning a third world war? I think what's going on in the background is the failure of trade has consequences. What happens is when your economy is failing and you can't compete anymore, like the United States and many countries in Europe, they get jealous of China. They decide they want to go and grab those resources rather than to deal fairly. So that is why I think we're seeing increased militarization is largely due to all the economic, you know, basically as the economies fail, people start to pick up the gun. They start to pick up the sledgehammer and decide they want to fight over things. So the failures of the international finance, so for example, the Bank for International Settlements in Switzerland, the International Monetary Fund, these failures are having consequences around the world. And I don't think many of the people that run these organizations really care. And they don't seem to have made sure in any way that the general economy is working well. So, for example, we've got a something called finance capitalism here in the West, which is allowing the hedge funds and the private equity firms to literally buy up anything they want, including political parties, including the press, including infrastructure, national infrastructure. And this is being bought and sold on an international scale. And so the individual governments have got less and less ability to actually, the people we elect, to steer policy. And that leaves a vacuum. That vacuum is being filled by people like the Bilderbergers and NATO. With Bilderberg is basically the political wing of NATO. And by the way, they're meeting in a few weeks' time in Lisbon. And there's very little, if any, democratic accountability with these people. They were set up after the Second World War by a former SS officer, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, to really steer and control the political policy and the who was going to be the leaders in the NATO countries. So I think the public is on the back foot here. And what we've got is we've got an elite that's decided, well, the Chinese have beaten us completely, hands down, in international trade. So we're going to start to pick up the gun. And that's why we've seen these enormous, I mean, the United States is now nearly $900 billion they're spending on weapons, as compared to the next one down is less than a third of that, which is $300 billion, which is the Chinese. So you can see, I think much of the money that's being spent in the United States, by the way, is being wasted on equipment, which when it's actually tested in a fight, will not do very well because the money's been going to friends of friends and people who are in the military clique. So that's, I think, basically the backdrop to this. Economies failing, trade failing, and therefore the military are cashing in as much as they can. And by the way, it's not the British that will be building these tanks because our steel industry has virtually been shut down here. We've got the Chinese and the Indians owning the British steel industry. And so we're having to now to buy almost everything, all this military equipment to replace that's going to Ukraine from the United States. And of course, that's part of the policy, is more and more wealth going to the United States. And if there is a war, it will happen on European soil, far away from the people making the money in America.
We're going to have a situation that's very similar to the end of World War II. And of course, based on the statistics that Mr. Gosling just mentioned, Mr. Schlanger, the United States is by far the world's biggest military spender, not to mention that it is also dealing with very high inflation and major domestic economic issues. Still, it remains the highest spender of military expenditure in the world by far. As Mr. Gosling also pointed out, the next in line is China, with which is actually three times less than that expenditure. So what do you think is exactly the policy behind this? Do you agree with Mr. Gosling's theory about a failing economy and the military trying to compensate for that?
Well, I generally agree with that, but I take it a little bit further. Why is there a war in Ukraine right now against Russia? We're seeing a shift of the world economy to Asia and the global south. This is what the BRICS represents, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa alliance. This is the move toward de-dollarization, the move away from the petrodollar system. And it's happening because the Western policies have been based on looting the poorer countries and using NATO military so-called out-of-area deployments to crush any nation which resists being looted, as in the case of Iraq or Libya. Now, the Russians and the Chinese have been unwilling to give up their sovereignty to the international banks, to the, as he mentioned, the International Monetary Fund, the Bank for International Settlements. The Great Reset is really about imposing a top-down banker's dictatorship worldwide on every country. But you can't, you can do that to Iraq or Libya, and if they resist, you can crush them. But Russia and China are strong enough economically and militarily that they can't be crushed that way. And so as a result, the decision was made to go after Russia through Ukraine. This was a decision that goes back many, many, many years. But in the most recent period, they tried to destroy Russia and break it up and steal its raw materials in the 1990s. Then when Putin came in, they couldn't do it. So, yes, the military buildup is driven by the collapse of the economy and the idea that, well, military expenditures can somehow make up for some of the loss in industry that's being outsourced and so on. Now, one other point just worth noting on the U.S. economy. While the military budget is now at about $858 billion, that leaves out a whole section of the nuclear projects, which are under the Department of Energy, and the CIA, which no one knows exactly what's spent there, and other so-called black box operations. It's probably closer to $1 trillion being spent now, and the reason is because the U.S. military is convinced that assuming the war in Ukraine comes to an end, and I think they're deluded to think that they'll be able to defeat Russia, but assuming it comes to an end, they're preparing for war with China. And some military people are saying by 2025, some are saying by 2027. People who are sane would say, why are we going into these wars when we can't afford health care in the United States? We can't afford infrastructure. We can't afford education. And so this, I assume, is going to become a big issue in the United States and in Western Europe, where governments are becoming increasingly unpopular and people are going out into the streets to protest. So the military budget is a consequence of a failed economic policy, but an economic policy that's driven by the needs of corporate cartels, including the so-called military-industrial complex.
Exactly, and this all seems to be feeding that military-industrial complex you just mentioned. Mr. Gosling, let's put the 750 overseas military bases of the United States in more than 80 countries in this mix, and obviously the money that needs to be spent there.
Well, look, we had a fantastic protest here in Britain, I can tell you, just up the road in Gloucestershire at the time of the Iraq War. Around about 1,500 of us from around this area collected there, and actually with in front of a bunch of dancing girls who were fantastic, by the way, dancing to disco music, we wrenched open the gates of that U.S. Air Force base at Fairford, and hundreds of people poured in, running around all over the place. And the reason we do that is because we really don't, as British people, want to have these US air bases in Britain. Now, that is not happening right now. That's because I think the Stop the War Coalition in London has become rather neutered, and they're not understanding what's going on in Ukraine. But the point remains that there is an enormous feeling here in Britain that we don't want these US military. Basically, they make us a target for Russian nuclear weapons. And so why would we want American bombers, etc., based here in Britain? And there are many countries in Europe that feel the same. The trouble is that they are no longer democracies. These countries are basically occupied and colonized by the US empire. I think we also have to try and understand what is... I mean, obviously, the situation in Ukraine is unwinnable. And what it's doing is it's dragging hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian males to their deaths. Why would the West want to do that? Because this seems to be a bizarre and incredibly insane and actually evil policy. So the answer, I think, is simply that they want to create as much carnage as possible in order to convince the European nations to come to Ukraine's aid. So there is a very, I think, dark philosophy here behind much of what's going on, including the idea, I mean, the idea that the solution to what's happening in Ukraine should be more weapons rather than peace talks. These sorts of solutions we're getting in the migrant crisis, the COVID crisis, we had a similar thing. We're getting a similar thing with the climate crisis, is that we're being given solutions which are actually making things worse. And there is this, I think, almost insane dark element. The same sort of thing that we saw emerging in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, where the completely innocent people, like the Jews at the time, are blamed for the problems of the actual state and the fascist, that is, the corporate predators at the same time. So, I mean, unless we can really deal with these individuals who are trying to actually deliberately make things worse, people will say to me sometimes, well, they wouldn't do that. Why would they do that? they make money out of crises. And that's what we're now seeing, is almost addiction to disaster capitalism, where companies can make absolute fortunes, as, for example, the vaccine companies did during the COVID crisis, out of something which is not necessarily making things any better at all. It's all about using the press to convince people and the governments to make lots of money. And the problem is, the main problem in all of this is, once you have weak governments, the arms industries and the arms manufacturers are able to actually create money-making wars almost wherever and whenever they want. And so we need some real serious pushback against this, what is called an accelerationist policy, the Dark Enlightenment policy, which it seems to be pervading so many of our governments, supposed democratic governments in the West. So the one problem that the elites do have, though, with the including obviously these arms companies, is that they can't really fight two fronts at the same time. They can't take on and fight Russia and their own domestic populations at the same time. They're certainly going to try, but one or other of those fronts is going to break, and we'll see which one it is first.
Exactly. Now, Mr. Schlanger, let's take a look at the Eastern Hemisphere. Let's go to the Far East, and, well, the tensions that are escalating there. We see the U.S. continuously holding military drills there, creating more tension, and, of course, not to mention the military bases that are, of course, located in that region also. How would you analyze that U.S. presence in the region? Is actually the United States looking for a future war, as it was mentioned earlier in our program, in that region?
Oh, absolutely. They've said it. Admiral Charles Richard, who's the head of STRATCOM, the main U.S. military base deployment, said a big one is coming, it's approaching us, and it'll be here before 2027. Now, here's the problem they have. The Chinese, by international law, Taiwan is part of China. It's recognized as part of China. If the U.S. starts sending weapons into Taiwan, as they're starting to say they will, and even troops into Taiwan, that would be the equivalent of what happened when the Soviet missiles were deployed into Cuba in 1962. How do you think the Chinese are going to react to that? They've already made it clear they will not allow those weapons to go in. So what's the Western strategy? Well, the idea is to try and bluff the Chinese by having a global NATO. That is, move NATO into the Indo-Pacific region. And the problem they have is that the Japanese can be scared into it. Remember, the Japanese allied with Hitler in World War II. The South Koreans are terrified of North Korea. And since no one's talking to the North Koreans anymore, the South Koreans have been brought into this alliance. And Australia, which is part of the Five Eyes, the British system, just signed a nuclear submarine agreement, which won't come into effect for maybe 10 or 12 years, but nevertheless is based on providing additional weaponry into that arena. Now, that's what global NATO is. That's what the so-called Quad is. That's what the AUKUS agreement is. But here's the problem they have. India is not going along with it. China is certainly not going along with it. Indonesia is not going along with it. Malaysia is not going along with it. And I think sooner or later the Philippines are going to break from this policy. In any case, the global South is moving away from the dollar system. And the threats of U.S. military intervention are becoming less real to them because they're seeing that the U.S. is, in a sense, paralyzed by the situation in Ukraine. It's one thing to send a lot of weapons in there, but even the U.S. military equipment and production is not capable of providing even the weapons needed by Ukraine to fight the Russians. Your other guest mentioned the situation in the United Kingdom. The Tobias Elwood from the Defense Committee of the House of Commons talked about British troops on the ground in Ukraine. And then he was asked, well, how long would you be able to supply them for? And he said, maybe 2 weeks. The British supply sector is incapable of producing. So the West is running up against reality. And reality is there's a shift in the world toward Eurasia. And I think Iran is a part of that. I think the what we saw with the Saudi agreement with Iran, what we're seeing with the bringing Syria back into the Arab world, this is a change that's catching Western policymakers completely off guard. So they have this fantasy that they can flex their military muscles and countries will submit. But this is a changed world. And what we need is demand for negotiations in the Western world, in North America, in Western Europe. We need a population that stands up and fights the way leaders of some of the poorer countries in the world are standing up against the bullies of the military of the U.S., U.K., and NATO.
So we're running out of time, Mr. Gosling. In order to wrap up our discussion, how do you see the future of this whole military expenditure going?
Well, it's only going upwards, as far as I can see. And unfortunately, you have to look at things like the derivative markets, because the gambling casino, which is the way the international stock markets are now run, actually does encourage speculation or against war. So, for example, if you're doing insider dealing, if you happen to know that a particular person is going to get assassinated, or say, for example, the conflict in the Sudan is going to kick off, which, by the way, has been started by AFRICOM, it seems to me, because the Russians wanted a naval base in Port Sudan. We don't get any analysis of that geopolitics here in the press in this part of the world. So I think really only upwards. And this is, I think, the absolute disease at the base of this is finance capitalism, is the fact that that the war today has simply become a chip on a gambling table, and people can make fantastic amounts of money at it. Stand back, particularly over in the United States, and watch the money rolling in as people die. And that, I think, is ultimately at the bottom of it. And also, it's the part of the conflict in Ukraine, because the Russians are not going to put up with that way of doing things. If the oligarchs and the gangsters get their fingers near the Kremlin, they get their fingers chopped off. I'm afraid in London, most of the political parties are welcoming finance capitalists, hedge fund managers, private equity firms to their lunches, and they seem to think that's a good thing. And those are the two different systems, I think, which are fighting in Ukraine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us live from Bristol, and Harley Schlanger, a spokesman of the International Schiller Institute from Germany. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of Spotlight. And thanks to all of you for watching this edition.